Thank you, Sue. We will now discuss Agenda Paper 2. This paper analyzes comments on the tentative agenda decision about the customer's accounting for cost of configuring or customizing the supplier's application software in a software as a service arrangement. The committee received 19 comment letters by the comment letter deadline. 5 respondents agree with the committee's analysis and observations in the tentative agenda decision, with a few of these respondents suggesting some clarifications. Several other respondents disagree with or express concerns about aspects of the committee's technical analysis and observations. In particular, the comment on whether the arrangement gives rise to an intangible asset, which is question 1 in the tentative agenda decision, and also on the interaction between IAS 38 and IFRS 15 within question 2 in the tentative agenda decision. Many of these respondents suggest adding a standard setting project to the work plan. Paragraphs 14 to 50 discuss respondents' comments together with our analysis. Based on our analysis, we recommend finalizing the agenda decision with changes to the tentative agenda decision as suggested in Appendix A. If the committee agrees with our recommendation, we will ask the board whether it objects to the agenda decision at the first board meeting at which it is practicable to present the agenda decision. I will now direct your attention to the question on page 21. Does the committee agree with our recommendation to finalize the agenda decision as explained in paragraph 51 of this paper?
Thank you very much. Who would like to comment? Lisa.
I think you're on mute, Lisa.
Sorry about that. I was going to say, I continue to agree with the agenda decision, and I think that we should finalize it. On the first question, I think the fact pattern is very clear that the customer does not control the software, and therefore any cost related to the configuration of that software or additional functionality would not be an intangible asset because the customer would not be able to control that. Therefore, the overall service agreement would be a service agreement. On the second question, I also agree with the staff paper that in this situation, in determining whether or not you have a multi-service agreement and whether or not those services are distinct, that you would look to IFRS 15 for that. And in this particular situation in the submission, I would say that the services are not distinct because they're completely linked to one another, and you would not do one without the other. So therefore, you would look to expense the cost of that over the contract period. However, in the comment letters, a perception that I had, or I think that there's a perception there, is that if the service or the configuration service was provided by a third party provider, that somehow you would potentially have different accounting treatment versus if it was provided by the service provider. And that's where I would disagree. If the customer had the choice to select between the service provider or a third party to do that configuration and additional functionality to the software, then I think that clearly demonstrates that the services are distinct. And therefore, once the service is completed, just doesn't matter which party provides it, that's at the point in time that you would expense for that cost. My suggestion I would have is that the current decision paper does not address that, and I think that it is quite important to make that distinction that if the customer has a choice between two counterparties to provide that service, that does demonstrate that it's distinct in the accounting treatment. It would be that you would recognize the cost at the time the service is performed. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Donna?
Afternoon, everybody. Firstly, I'm in agreement with the position that has been taken, and I agree that we should finalize this agenda decision as explained in paragraph 51. In particular, I am in agreement with paragraph 19, which basically indicated that is that the ability to obtain a benefit from the configuration or customization doesn't mean that the customer has the power to obtain the future economic benefits. And I think that is something that was reiterated in a number of the comment letters, where specifically individuals from commerce and from industry who were quite strong in their views that this should actually be an intangible asset and should be included either as a project setting, a standard setting with the ISB in line with the US GAAP. And I can understand why the decision that we're going to actually make is probably going to be a bit uncomfortable and a little bit unpopular. The reason being is that with some operating or service expenses or service costs are going to go into operating expenses, and they're not going to be shown as an intangible amortization, which could have an impact, for example, on EBITDA or any ratio that the customer might, or the company might be using. So I do think that we are definitely going to, one, have a difference in not necessarily measurement, but probably classification between US GAAP and IFRS. And that is something that always causes dual reporters some pain. However, I am in agreement that from a technical perspective, the comments and the position taken in the paper is technically correct in terms of IFRS. And in addition, I agree with paragraph 34 in particular, where we think that the particular fact pattern IFRS 15 should be included. So I echo Lisa's comments in this regard. I do have some comments on the rewording potentially, but it's very minor, and I'm very happy just to drop an email to the team on that one. Other than that, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Sue, we're not hearing you at the moment. Maybe Bertrand, would you like to speak next?
Yes.
Bertrand, I think you're on mute.
No, I'm not on mute.
We can hear you now, thank you.
No, okay, but I was not in mute, so I don't know what happened,
okay.
Sorry about that. So I was saying that I agree with the staff proposal to finalize the agenda decision. And by the way, I had the impression that the agenda paper is a very well balanced agenda paper, and that it addresses the questions raised by comment letters, and it answers to those questions, and I think in a very well-balanced manner. So I think it was a very good and well argumented agenda paper. I have one comment that will probably echo a bit what Lisa and Donne have just said, and it relates probably to what is currently written in the draft agenda decision on page 25, the paragraph D you added to deal with the circumstances when a third-party supplier is providing the configuration or customization services for the customer. Maybe I would nuance a bit the wording of this paragraph, because as worded, it seems to imply that whenever it will be a third-party supplier providing the service, in all circumstances, it will never be accounted similarly as it could be accounted when the services are provided by the provider of the SaaS software. So maybe I would nuance that and incorporate the wording or the idea that is expressed currently in agenda paper paragraph 38. That is a bit more nuanced, and that notably introduced the notion of agents, and probably this could deal with maybe rare situations, I admit that, but situations whereby the third party supplier would just be an agent of the SaaS provider, and hence maybe then it could refer to the accounting described in paragraph C of the draft agenda decision on page 24, so that there would be two possibilities in accounting depending on circumstances, the same when the services are provided by the supplier of the SaaS arrangements, or when it is provided by a third party supplier.
Thank you, Bertrand. Apologies, everybody. I've finally got Wi-Fi connection back. Carsten, I think you're next.
Yeah, thanks. This certainly is quite a hot topic, I think, that captures a lot of interest from stakeholders. So I did support the tentative agenda decision, and I continue to think that the matter can be resolved via an agenda decision. There's one particular aspect of the proposed agenda decision, though, that I'm not really comfortable with, which is around the proposed changes in the wording addressing separately the accounting, depending on, you know, on whether the customization services are provided by, you know, either the supplier of the application software or third parties. So similar to Bertrand and others, you know, I think some nuanced changes are needed in this regard. On this aspect, I wasn't sure whether this analysis in the staff paper is fully consistent with the proposed amendments to the wording of the agenda decision, and also whether the wording of the agenda decision is sufficiently clear in this regard. You know, so for example, paragraph 35B of the staff paper suggests that the staff disagrees that the customer's accounting should mirror that of the supplier. But I think, you know, many would read the proposed wording in the agenda decision as it's drafted at the moment to suggest otherwise. Also, paragraph 39 of the staff paper states that the customer's assessment would not differ solely based on whether the supplier of the application software or third party provides the customization services. But again, I think many would read the proposed words in the agenda decision to suggest that it does matter and that the accounting might be different depending on who provides the customization services. I would also note that the current words in the agenda decision would likely give rise to some structuring opportunities. You know, my understanding of those words is then that when the customization services are provided by the software supplier, the entity would often recognize the cost of the customization services over the term of the underlying software service. However, when the customization is provided by a third party, the current words indicate that the entity would recognize the customization services upfront when the third party supplier customizes the software. So expense recognition would effectively mirror revenue recognition by the third party supplier. Now, I think on a high level, I think that, you know, there are two potential ways to look at this when the customization services are provided by a third party. You know, the first view would be that you look at the contract with the with the software provider and the contract with the third party provider in isolation, essentially. Under this view, I think the entity has received the customization services when the third party has performed its service. So essentially, expense recognition of the customer would mirror the revenue recognition of the third-party supplier, which seems to be the view that, you know, that is currently suggested by the proposed wording. The second view would be that you look at the contract with the software provider and the contract with the third-party supplier on a combined basis. So under this view, which services an entity receives and when it receives those services depends on the nature of the services provided. So the expense recognition of the entity would be the same regardless of who provides the customization services. I think there may also be, you know, some combination or variation of these two views, perhaps depending on the exact facts and the identification of the respective contract or unit of account, you know, and the respective rights and obligations for each party to the contract. So I think which of these views is acceptable will depend on a number of factors and the exact facts on how to determine the respective contract or unit of account to be analyzed. For example, there may be a tri-party arrangement where an entity would only have one single contract with two suppliers. Alternatively, there may be two highly interrelated contracts, in which case my sense is that there would be some judgment involved determining whether it might be appropriate to look at these contracts on a combined basis. In practice, you know, I think rather than two clearly separate contracts on the one hand and a single tri-party arrangement on the other side of the spectrum, there may also be separate legal contracts that may nonetheless have a strong linkage or interrelation. You know, there may even be cross-references between those contracts, or the contracts may be contingent or conditional upon each other. So I think depending on the exact facts, I think, you know, it's conceivable that an entity may be able to account for these in a similar way as a tri-party arrangement. So I think in these cases, there may be some judgment involved around determining the contract or unit of account, the counterparties of the related services, when those services are received, and when it might be appropriate to look at the contracts on a combined basis. So if there's, say, a strong linkage between the contracts with the two suppliers, or perhaps even a tri-party arrangement, you know, it seems unclear from the wording in the agenda decision how that assessment would work. The words proposed in the agenda decision seem to imply that, you know, that looking at the contracts with the third party supplier in isolation would be the only acceptable approach, regardless of the exact facts in this regard. So I think in practice we are seeing a variety of different fact patterns in this regard, and so I think it's maybe, you know, the way it's currently drafted, it's maybe overly simplified. So. Also, I think that a fact pattern where a single customer is receiving services from multiple suppliers, either via a single tri-party arrangement or, say, as part of, you know, highly interrelated or integrated contracts, is simply not considered or addressed, I think, in either IFRS 15 or IAS 38. Now, looking at the staff's technical analysis, I thought the analysis in paragraph 32 of the staff paper is particularly important, which states that in applying paragraph 69A of IS 38, it is first necessary for a customer to identify which services it receives in order to then determine when the supplier performs those services. However, the words in 69A refers to services received by a supplier, which doesn't necessarily preclude that services may be provided by more than one supplier. I think paragraph 69A was intended to clarify that the entity books an expense when it receives the services rather than when it uses those services. I think that paragraph certainly wasn't written to address a situation where multiple interrelated services are provided by multiple suppliers. So I would also note that the agenda's decision suggested an entity would look at IFRS 15 in identifying which services it receives, but it no longer refers to IFRS 15 in determining when an entity receives those services. So this last part has now been removed in the proposed word. So it seems to have changed our mind in this regard, so that referring to IFRS 15 by analogy would not be acceptable in determining when an entity receives services. My view on this is I think an entity needs to first determine the contract and the counterparties to the contract before determining which services it receives and when. So if the first step in the analysis would be for an entity to determine which services it receives, applying the guidance in IFRS 15, and say an entity concludes in that first step that it receives just one single integrated service, seems contradictory that you would then receive a separate service, or that you might receive a separate service from a third-party supplier. Therefore, you know, assuming we focus on the rights and obligations arising from a contract, I think the first step, even before determining which services an entity receives and when, has to be to identify the contract or unit of account, which would then be the basis to determine which services an entity receives and when. So, I think it would seem reasonable that an entity would look at the terms of the contract to determine when it receives the services. In my view, this means that an entity first needs to identify the contract or unit of account before analyzing which services it receives. And I think this needs to be more clear in the agenda decision. Again, I think a fact pattern where a single customer is receiving services from multiple suppliers, either via a single tri-party arrangement or, say, as part of two contracts that are highly interrelated, is simply not considered, I think, in either IFRS 15 or IS 38. So for these reasons, I'm not comfortable with the suggested words in the agenda decision that the customers would recognize the cost as an expense when the third-party supplier customizes the application service software. So even though the proposed agenda decision does not use these words, I think people will read this as suggesting essentially mirror accounting. That is, that the customer would recognize the cost as an expense when the third-party supplier recognizes the revenue from the contract. I think the analysis on the appropriate accounting will depend on a number of factors. I think in the case of a tri-party arrangement or when separate contracts are closely interrelated, there might be some judgment around determining the counterparty or counterparties of the contract and around determining the respective contract or unit of account. I think additional issues might also arise, around whether the third party may be acting as an agent of the software provider. I think these concerns are currently not really addressed in the proposed wording. It seems unclear how the accounting might work, for example, in the case of a tri-party arrangement or where the contracts are closely interrelated. Instead, I think the proposed words give people a steer that you would in fact mirror the supplier's accounting whenever there's a separate legal contract with a third-party provider. So for these reasons, I'm not supportive of this particular aspect of the proposed agenda decisions. So because of this, I think the agenda decision should either be more specific to explain how to determine the respective contract or unit of account, or acknowledge that IFRS does not contain clear guidance on this particular point, or perhaps just remain silent on this point, because I think there are a lot of complexities involved in this. So maybe that's also a good option. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Carsten. Just a couple of really general observations from me, and then I'm going to hand over to Trina to make a comment, and then Mary, I think, has a question for you, if that's all right. I think a couple of points you've touched on. I think it's going to be important, obviously, that if we publish an agenda decision, it's done in a way that's not going to be overread. So, for example, that people don't think we're saying mirroring, because I don't think anybody means mirroring. But obviously, we need to balance that with not having an agenda decision that's so complicated that we don't get some core messages out. And that's, what we're trying to deal with here. But maybe just having made those general observations, Petrina, can I hand to you to see if there's anything you want to say in response to Carsten before I hand to Mary?
Yeah, sure. And maybe, Carsten, just in response to a few things you said, and just for the benefit of other committee members, I'll just sort of, I suppose, set out some thoughts on maybe how and why I think the agenda decision, works as it does, or how does it work. I think, Carsten, there's a couple of things you said. You obviously commented on the fact that maybe some of these types of arrangements could be quite, are quite big contracts, quite complicated arrangements, can involve more than two parties or whatever. And I understand that, but I suppose what we've done, I think, in setting out the requirements here, particularly under question two, or like setting out sort of the questions you might ask yourself or how the customer walks through, hopefully tries to keep that simple in a sense, but hopefully not too simple that it doesn't work for more complicated situations, but simple in the sense that you can understand what it's saying, but also importantly is kind of true to the requirements. And maybe just to pick up on that, I think you also talked about the contract a lot, and I suppose that is very important, I think, to us as well in terms of the requirements. Because what a customer is doing here when it comes to question two, if it's concluded there's no intangible asset, it is applying the requirements in 68 to 70 of IAS 38. And importantly, when digging down into it, it's applying those requirements in 69A, which means it is referring to looking at when the supplier performs in accordance with our contract to deliver those services to the entity. And that's why in the agenda decision, both under bullet A, and then when we come down to bullets C and D, where we've addressed the third party versus the SaaS supplier, we are referring into the contract to deliver the configuration or customization services to the customer, because we think that exactly reflects that requirement in 69A of IAS 38. It's reflecting what IAS 38 is asking the customer to do which is to look at the contract to deliver, in this case, the configuration or customization services to it. Regardless of how complicated it is, I think any customer is going to need to and have to work out who it's signed a contract with for these services. And that's all. And it will need to know that, and it will know that if it's negotiated the contracts. So again, I think hopefully, at least to me, it's quite clear in the agenda decision that we say, you're looking at this, yeah, you're looking at when the supplier has performed in accordance with the contract to deliver those services. To the extent that there might be more than one service involved when you're looking at that contract to deliver those services, then you'll refer to IFRS 15 to identify whether there's more than one service. And as I say, I'll just repeat again that I think that what we've done in C and D hopefully is quite clearly set out to say that you're in C when you as the customer have negotiated that contract to deliver the configuration or customization service with the SaaS provider. And here's your thought process when you've negotiated that contract with the SaaS provider. And what D is saying, in the situation where you've negotiated that contract with a third party provider, you know, here's what you do. So I don't know if that's helpful in any way, just in saying sort of how the agenda decision sets it out.
Could I, Mary, would you like to, did you have a question for Carsten? And then after that, I'll go back to the queue, and Young Sue was next in the queue, but Mary first.
thanks, Sue. Carsten, listening to your comments and thinking about them, what started out as a question has probably become more of a comment at this point. I guess I just wanted to offer caution to kind of maintain mission focus. And what I mean by that is the issues that you raised about what if it's a tripartite contract, what if there's contingencies, cross-references, dependencies, et cetera, I think is a whole nother set of very facts and circumstances that could that bring a lot of complexity to applying these. And as you know, reminding myself that I'm wearing a board observer hat, I think I would caution trying to introduce either the existence of those without analysis, and also against the introduction of analysis of those, could I call it complexifying factors at this point? In time. So I think, as Sue said at the beginning, let's not assume people overread things, and as I think the focus is appropriately on assessing whether there are unintended signals in the drafting, and if there are not, I think it then becomes a question of whether there are any follow-ons that would be considered separately. So that, that's my advice as a board observer watching, thinking about the issues that you raised.
And I think, Marie, I would agree with you that, this is introducing a lot of additional complexity. And so maybe we should not go down that route. My only concern would be, maybe we should just, because these arrangements are quite common, you commonly have this interrelationship. Maybe we should, just be silent at all, completely be silent on this analysis, rather than suggesting, it's either the supplier of the application software or it's a third-party supplier. But I agree with you, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to address, all these complexities in an agenda decision.
And maybe on that, it does go back to looking again at how the fact pattern itself is set out, because normally it is the recitation of the fact pattern that's the important establishment of the boundaries. In fact, in many cases.
Yeah, making sure it can't be overread. Young Sue, would you like to come in?
Okay, thank you. I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion, and also I agree with finalizing the agenda decision, but like others, I have a concern about paragraph D at page 25. I think this paragraph seems to provide a very specific guidance. And this paragraph is telling us some kind of, the rules instead of principles. What it says is that when we, encounter a situation where a third party provides services, it should be regarded as the upfront fees or the expense at the time when the service is provided. So this paragraph kind of is saying that we have to look at who provides the service, which seems like a rule instead of a principle. I think the other parts of the agenda decisions are well written. I mean, explaining the principles instead of the rules. But certainly in this paragraph, I think we are talking about the rules. And also, I think that this paragraph describes only one single fact out of many other facts that the customer has to consider. And I do not see why who provides the service is that important that we have to write in the agenda decision without referring to any other, the facts or circumstances. And finally, I want to point out, the Carsten also said that, but the submitter did not ask questions on the situation described in this paragraph at all. The submitter asked only the situation where one service provider is providing two different services. So I think if we answer to this question, then that means that we are going beyond the scope of the questions described was asked by the submitter. So as Carsten said, I think we're better silent about this situation where a third provider, third party is providing the service. So my suggestion is to delete this paragraph from the agenda decision. That's all.
Thank you, Yongsu. Jens?
Thank you. I agree with the agenda decision as it's drafted and as it's amended. Other than others, I don't think that the amendment in D is harmful, and I don't think that when one can overread it. So you always can start a discussion on what is the contract and whether there is a principal-agent relationship, I think, but this is a different fact pattern. So I do think that that's a clarification that we added in paragraph D is helpful, and I would not object in keeping it. The only slight remark I do have, when we add paragraph D, in my reading, there must be a minor amendment for paragraph E, because paragraph E is only referencing to the supplier. I do think it would be much clearer if it would refer to the supplier or the third-party supplier, so to keep them both in E, rather than only to reference to the supplier only, that if you pay before receiving the service, it's regardless of whether you pay for the supplier or third-party supplier, that you would recognize a prepayment asset. And with regard to D, I do think it's helpful and gives another flavor on the agenda decision, and so I'm in agreement. I don't think it's harmful in any way to include it.
Thanks, Jens. Sophie?
Yes, hello. I also agree with the proposed agenda decision, with the change made to the agenda decision. I agree with paragraph D. I think it's helpful. I believe that it is simple, quite clear, and I don't believe it is rule-based. It is logical, and so to add that, and it is in compliance with the previous paragraph. No other comment, and I believe that the staff paper is complete and very well address the comments made by stakeholders.
Thank you, Sophie. Bob?
Thanks, Sue. I also support the agenda decision as proposed. I think it's got some important principles in here. In my mind, there's only three ways that costs can be initially put on the balance sheet. One is if it meets the definition of an asset on its own, which it would if it was sold by the company, but that's not what we have in most cases in SaaS arrangements. Two, it's part of a cost of a recognized asset, which we don't have in a SaaS arrangement. So that's all handled in question one. The third way is if it's prepaid, and that gets into question two. Is it a part of a prepayment on the SaaS arrangement? Now that gets into whether do I have a multiple element arrangement here or not. And it's not just about who provides the service, but who benefits. So for example, you can have a payment to a third party supplier, and that would still be part of the SaaS arrangement. That's if the supplier is the one who benefits from those costs. And it's very rare, but I've seen a case where the customer has paid, but it's for the benefit of the supplier, and therefore was part of the whole SaaS arrangement. So, and I think that's principles in D, because it says the contract to deliver the configuration or customization services to the customer. So it's not just about who's the provider, it's also who benefits. And I think that concept is in there. But once you say, okay, well, the customer is the one that benefits, then pointing out that, well, it's probably a separate element is easy. Now, if the supplier is the one who provides it, that gets a little more difficult. But because it's a service, I mean, if this was equipment and the supplier was providing two pieces of equipment with different lives, different physical characteristics, it'd be easy. But this is all the services, it gets a little more difficult. But I still think there's principles in here that talk about, you know, can the customer benefit separately from the configuration services separate from the SaaS arrangement? That's all in here, and that's important concepts that I think we need to convey. So for those reasons, I think I support the agenda decision as proposed.
Thanks, Bob. Guy?
Thanks, Sue. I, too, in general agreement with the agenda decision. I do have a few wording suggestions I'll comment on in a minute. I guess that one additional point I just wanted to explain my thought process on that did cause me some reflection, which hasn't been mentioned as yet, is the aspect of the paper in the agenda decision that is establishing, I think, that in this fact pattern, you're required to apply IFRS 15 to identify the services the customer receives in determining when the supplier performs in accordance with the contract. And I had reflected and paused myself on whether that, could possibly have some unintended consequences in the context of other fact patterns and, establishing a general principle in terms of how 69A is to be applied, and the requirement to always look to 15 to identify the services. As I reflected on that, I'm not entirely sure how significant the possibility of unintended consequences could be here. Recognizing that every fact pattern one is going to face is going to have unique facts and circumstances. And I also appreciate that if you judge, on this particular fact pattern, that IFRS 15 deals with similar and related issues, it would seem it certainly could in other fact patterns too. And it does seem awkward to say it's somehow optional to make that link to IFRS 15. So, as I reflected on that, on balance, I came to the view that I think I have to accept the position on this in the paper and in the agenda decision. recognizing it's addressing this particular fact pattern. It's not addressing other fact patterns. And there certainly could be other fact patterns where a similar thought process should, in fact, be applied. But, you know, those other fact patterns are beyond the scope of this agenda decision. So I wanted to sort of mention that that additional sort of point of reflection that I had. But I think I came to the view that I agree with the way that's spelled out in the paper and in the agenda decision. Maybe in terms of a few comments on wording, maybe first with the with new paragraph D and the distinction between the SaaS supplier providing the configuration or customization services versus a third party. I do agree that the assessment there could be different. So I like the fact that the revised wording in the agenda decision makes that distinction. In listening to the comments that others were making on that, I think my reaction was, I think it's similar to what Mary was suggesting, that, you know, perhaps there's a way to say something additional in the agenda decision, in the fact pattern in the agenda decision, to ensure that aspect is not overread using someone's phrase. So, you know, perhaps in the fact pattern there's a way to express that, you know, in the third party context, that contract has been negotiated separately with the third party, where the third party is acting as principal in that arrangement, or, you know, something along those lines, working it into the fact pattern to hopefully address some of the concerns that others have mentioned. Maybe in terms of a couple other comments on the wording in the agenda decision. In paragraph B, we have, and I think Karsten noted it, been more precise in the aspects of IFRS 15 that we think are similar and relevant and should be referred to, and that is the identification of the services in determining when the supplier performs under the contract, and not necessarily when IFRS 15 would require the supplier to recognize the revenue associated with those services. And I agree with that distinction in paragraph B. But as we progress through the agenda decision, we don't continually refer back to that identification of services notion. And I wonder if repeating that, you know, for example, in the last sentence of B and also in C, might be helpful to avoid any misunderstanding on that front for readers of the agenda decision. And then in paragraph D that we've added, paragraph D is written as though there's nothing else to consider in terms of identification of services, and so that caused me some pause. You know, is there potentially a perceived inconsistency there in D versus what we say in B? And should that be tightened up perhaps in the fact pattern again to make it clear that there isn't anything else in that third party contract that would require us to look to 15 to identify whether there are other services that we need to contemplate in paragraph D. But again, that is perhaps a fact pattern clarification as well in the agenda decision. The last thing I'd like to mention is a number of commenters, as everyone has seen, have suggested standard setting. And I certainly appreciate the context of those comments. And I think there may be a need for standard setting going forward. I don't think that prevents us from finalizing this agenda decision based on an analysis of the way the current standards should be applied. But I do think it might be useful to perhaps consider mentioning an IFRC update outside of the agenda decision, some of the past discussions of the committee on that front and the previous feedback the committee has provided to the board around consideration of a project on intangibles and modernization of the standard in the context of digitization, et cetera, as part of the agenda consultation. So expressing that in IFRIC update might be useful to be responsive to the comments that came through on standard setting.
Thanks, Guy. Brian?
Thank you, and hello, everyone. I agree with the agenda decision. I voted for it last time, and I agree with this version too. A couple of detailed comments in relation to question two. Firstly, I found the amendments to paragraph B and C very helpful, actually. I thought they made the logic clearer, and they made the reason for the cross-reference from 69A to IFRS 15 much more precise. So Guy was talking about unintended consequences. For me, the additional precision in paragraphs B and C actually reduced the risk of unintended consequences. So I thought they were helpful. My other comment is in relation to paragraph D, which a lot of people have commented on. Personally, I paused the first time I read paragraph D, but having reflected, I'm possibly more comfortable with paragraph D than a number of people who have spoken. I think I have a threefold reason for feeling relatively comfortable with paragraph D. I think, firstly, you have to think where paragraph D fits in the analysis. It is just in question two, so it is just addressing the question as to whether or not a cost incurred in a party in a contract with a third party is a prepayment or expense in relation to a contract with somebody else. So I think the placement is important. I think secondly, I find the logic pretty clear, and I think this is a point that Lisa made at the very beginning of this discussion. Now, if it's possible for a third party to provide the service, then if the supplier had provided the service, it would have been separate because it would have failed the distinct test, because if you can buy the same thing from somebody else, it must be capable of being distinct. So I tend to think that D isn't a rule, it's just an application of the distinct principle to the case where the service is being provided by somebody else. So there's a lot of congruence there, which I like. And then the third point, I guess, which a number of people commented on, is, you know, what if the arrangement was a little bit different? What if the third party was in fact an agent? I have to say, when I read D, my natural reading of D is that it's describing a situation in which the third party is a principal. And I do think that the general drafting convention throughout IFRS standards is that the wording addresses the accounting as a principal unless you're already in an agent-principal discussion. Now, you do not qualify every single statement in IFRS by adding acting as principal in brackets to it. So I naturally read D as referencing a statement about a scenario in which the third party is acting as principal. If there were to be a drafting amendment, to clarify that, I know Guy suggested tweaking the fact pattern. I suppose an alternative, picking up on something that Bertrand said, was that perhaps there could be a final sentence added to the end of D that said something like, if the third party is acting as an agent for the supplier of the software, then the customer applies the logic in paragraph C. But overall, I feel very comfortable with this agenda decision. I like the amendments to B and C, and D, you know, took a bit of thought, but I'm pretty comfortable with where it is, and I can see more than one way of adding a little bit of clarification around D if people aren't comfortable with that.
Thanks, Brian. Goro?
Thank
Thank you.
I agree with the staff's recommendation to finalize the agenda decision with the proposed amendment. As a financial statement user, I supported the staff's analysis and recommendation in December last year. That said, I observed there was some concern in Japan that the reference to IFRS 15 in the tentative agenda decision. They were concerned that the reference to IFRS 15 in the agenda decision might mislead people to believe that they are always required to consult IFRS 15. Now that particular reference to the requirements in IFRS 15 in the C of this agenda decision is proposed to be removed. I believe that this removal should address the concerns in Japan, and I would support to finalize the agenda decision with the proposed amendments. As a whole, I think that logic of this agenda decision is clear and helps even financial statement users to understand how to account the SaaS arrangement described in the fact pattern of the submission. So I agree to finalize the agenda decision as proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Goro. Jim.
All right. I agree with the staff analysis, and I also agree with the conclusion and the proposed wording. And I think dealing with the software industry powered by the current internet capabilities and the cloud computing and the variety of business models they provide could be very complicated. And given the narrowly defined and also clearly defined fact patterns, our staff analysis and the conclusion is very useful and clearly defined. And as people mentioned here, we may see some varieties of business activities out there, but we cannot address them all. I like the paragraph D and E the way it is, since it introduce the solid or the appropriate way of thinking in this fact pattern and a little bit similar fact patterns, but we all know we cannot address all the fact patterns. So by issuing this agenda decision, hopefully we'll do the industry some service explaining how to deal with similar issues. If we see some totally different or slightly different, but may end up with different results, that's up to this special situation. And if the result change, so be it. It's not up to this task to fulfill. So overall, I agree with the staff analysis. And in particular, I think paragraph D and E should stay. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Renata.
Hi, thank you, Sue. At first, I would agree with the agenda decision, but I have some points that I'd like to comment. I think more and more the companies are looking for cloud solutions that what is being offered by the suppliers. And we are entering a new kind of business that challenge us to think a little bit different. So what I think is that sometimes without the customization, you are not going to be able to use the software. For example, nowadays Oracle, that is the competitor of SAP, is offering as an ERP a cloud solution. And without the customization, the company is not going to be able to use the cloud solution. So customization and configuration is really important in this process. Although I'm not buying an asset, I'm not going to control an asset, I need to spend resources, financial resources and human resources to develop this configuration. That's really important. Without that, you are not going to be able to use the software. So my other point is that this kind of configuration will bring benefits for a period of time. Most of the time that you are going to be able to use the cloud solution. So even though it's not filling, attending, meeting all the requirements of intangible assets, we need to classify it as an asset because it's going to bring benefits to the companies for a long period of time. Another point that I believe it's important is that if I was in a business combination, probably the person, the company that's being the acquirer would be attributing value to this kind of customization. In the companies that I've been working for, we have a lot of, we are depending on software, but if we don't have the customizations, we are not going to be able to benefit from these softwares. So it's really important. It's a kind of relationship, really important that in a business acquisition would be attributed value. I believe that we are entering a moment in these cloud solutions that we would kind of make an analogy to the fixed assets. It's like installation costs, although I'm not buying the asset. Well, I gave you the example of Oracle, but I have another examples that I'm not going to waste the time in being repetitive, but I think there are more aspects to be considering in deciding how to account for the costs incurred with configuration and customization. But at first, I would agree with the agenda decision.
Thank you. Yang Su, did you want to come back in?
Yes. I'd like to clarify. I want to say a little bit more about why I said paragraph D seems to be a rule or a specific guidance than a principle. I think paragraph D says who provides service determines everything. I mean, if a third party is providing services, paragraph D says that service is distinct. And I think that is not quite right. I think what is more important is whether the service could be performed by a third party. So if a service is performed by a third party, then no matter who provides the service, that service could be distinct. I mean, no matter whether a service, the original service provider is providing that service or a third party provides the service, if the third party can provide the service, then that service is a kind of distinct service. So I think this paragraph D seems to be quite overly simplified and could give a kind of wrong direction to the people. Another point I want to make is that this paragraph D can be used for income manipulation too. So for example, if a company wants to recognize expense as soon as possible to decrease their net income, all they have to do is to simply let a third party to do the service. Then that service is going to be recognized as soon as that third party provides the service. So those are the things why I said that this paragraph D could have some unexpected consequences because it's more like a rule instead of a principle. That's all.
Thank you. John.
Yes, hello. Just a couple of quick comments because I don't want to repeat what others have said, but I am supportive of the staff's analysis and the adjustments or the modifications to the tentative agenda decision. I actually find the addition of the clarifications to paragraph C and the addition of paragraph D to be helpful. I am sympathetic to a number of the comments that were raised by respondents regarding the challenges with IAS 38. But in this instance, I feel that the staff's analysis and the interpretation captured within the agenda decision are fully logical and reasonable. I did like Guy's suggestion of perhaps including some mention of the fact of the previous communication to the board regarding the concerns of constituents on the principles in IAS 38. Maybe reiterating that as those concerns being shared, because I think again we see here further evidence of questions about the principles in that standard and the applicability of those principles in the standard in the current business environment. And I think Renata's comments kind of highlight that as well. Again, to me, that's not an issue of interpretation. I think the agenda decision is reasonable, is correct, is appropriate with the principles as presently contained in IAS 38. But I think it just further highlights maybe some concerns with the standard as presently drafted.
Thanks, John. Okay, so with that, I'm going to have the pleasure of handing over to Petrina to tell us what she's heard and what suggestions she has for any adjustments to the wording in the agenda decision that's attached in the appendix to the paper prior to asking the committee for a vote on whether they support the finalisation of the agenda decision. And separate from that, we can just get a confirmation from the committee at the end if you would like us to again remind the board that this is again a situation where there were observations made by the committee that this provides further evidence, if you like, of why it might be good to relook at IAS 38. But firstly, with the agenda decision, Petrina, can I hand over to you?
Sure, thanks, Sue. So I'm going to start on page 22, the first page of the agenda decision. I think I heard a good suggestion. It was largely from Guy about maybe adding a clarification to the fact pattern. And that is, in the sort of analysis that we've done, we've almost assumed here that we're dealing with a situation where the customer has the SaaS arrangement where it's got access to the supplier software and it's clearly getting services for configuration or customization, but it's not getting anything else. So we're not talking about, you know, anything else that might be bundled in the contracts. So I think it might be helpful to perhaps add a C bullet to the fact pattern that just says the customer receives no other goods and services, because I think that would make it just slightly clearer, the fact pattern we're talking about. I've then heard a number of people talk about maybe a clarification in the situation where the third party is acting as an agent or sort of is doing some subcontracting work, you know, in the situation where the customer has signed a contract with the SaaS provider, but maybe there's a third party being involved as an agent or a subcontractor. And so I think there, can I leave it open? I think there's two ways we could do that. I think we could perhaps do it near the beginning of C by including a reference at the beginning of C to say that when in C we talk about the contract being with the supplier of the application software, we could add something there to say this sort of includes situations in which the supplier subcontracts the configuration or customization services to a third party. Alternatively, we could have a look, and I know someone said this could be done perhaps alternatively at the end of bullet D. So maybe if you leave it with us, we would suggest including something along those words, and we'll look at whether it's best to do it near the beginning of bullet C or otherwise to do it at the end of bullet D. And the wording would be along the lines of talking about when the third party acts as a subcontractor for the SaaS provider. I know a number of you mentioned using the word agent. My inclination is to talk perhaps about subcontracting and not agent, just so that we are not implying that people have to go into, for example, the principal agent requirements in IFRS 15 or elsewhere. So that's why my suggestion is more subcontract. I then also heard, I think it's a small point, but somebody say that perhaps it would be helpful in bullet E just to maybe put in a clarification there that when we refer to the supplier, maybe we'll clarify that that is the supplier of the configuration or customization services, because then that would pick up, you know, both C and D, regardless of who the supplier is. We're talking about the supplier of the configuration or customization services. So those were the three changes I was going to suggest making. There were a couple of other suggestions I just want to let you know that I heard, and I'll just explain why, at least at the minute, unless you tell me otherwise, we weren't going to pick them up. One is that Lisa sort of suggested perhaps adding a bit more around distinct, you know, maybe saying if you could get a third party to do it, that kind of means distinct. I'd be inclined not to go there, because I think if we were to include anything more about the actual assessment of distinct or not distinct, we'd potentially have to put in an awful lot more words to be complete in terms of picking up all the relevant words from IFRS 15. So I wouldn't do that. I think, Guy, you mentioned whether we should perhaps repeat some of the references to IFRS 15 or some of the wording that we've got in Bullet B, perhaps down further within C. And I suppose at least I wasn't going to do that, because I thought at the minute it was kind of there already by having sort of the Roman numeral 1 and 2 that refers to the services being distinct in one and not distinct in two. So I didn't see a need to add more words. And I suppose when we already have quite a long agenda decision, I'm keen not to add more words that we think perhaps are not necessary. I also know Carsten talked about adding a bit more perhaps about who the contract's with, etc. But I think that would potentially add a lot of complexity to the agenda decision. So I'm not suggesting adding that either.
Okay, thanks, Petrina. Carsten, did you want to...
Sorry.
Carsten, did you want to make a comment? Yeah. Somebody's not muted.
I think it's better on. So anyway, I just wanted to pick up one suggestion that was made. I think it was by Guy. Which I personally would find quite helpful, which is, you know, maybe clarify that the in the case of a third party provider, that the contract is, you know, separately negotiated and not interrelated with the contract with the software supplier. At least me, for me, that would be, I would feel much more comfortable if we had that clarification. I don't know if that's something that might be helpful, so I just wanted to suggest that. Thank you.
Okay, I'll let Bertrand in, and then Petrina, maybe you could respond to both. Bertrand?
Thank you, Sue. It's on page 23, the sentence that says, and those activities do not create a resource controlled by the customer. When I first read the paragraph, I asked myself, which activities are we talking about? Maybe if we, and when you read the paragraph again, of course, it's the configuration or customization activities, of course, but I would have worded it that way, so that it is the reading of this paragraph without obviously changing the meaning, if that's okay for you.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty straightforward editorial suggestion. Petrina, did you want to comment on Carsten's suggestion?
Yeah, sure. So anyway, yes, I agree with Bertrand's as a sort of editorial helpful clarification. Carsten, I wouldn't propose to add anything more to your suggestion, more because I suppose, again, I'm just wondering how to do it. And I almost think hopefully the opening sentence to bullet D already gets us there by talking about the contract to deliver the services being with a third party supplier. So I hope that that's sort of getting at the point that this is a contract that then is negotiated between the customer and the third party supplier.
Okay, so with those suggested amendments that Petrina has walked us through, could I get a show of hands from the committee on who supports finalising the agenda decision? And Brian supports as well.
Can I check if Renata supported? I saw all hands up except Carsten and Renata.
Renata? Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
So that's 13.
And then, okay, thank you. A couple of people made the suggestion that we should put something in update And in addition to that, give feedback to the board about IES 38, and a couple of other people also just noted some of the growing issues coming up in terms of contracts, including Renata. So with that in mind, separate to the agenda decision, would the committee like us to include something in update which acknowledges the fact that the committee noted that a number of comments had been received raising issues suggesting that a broader reconsideration of IES 38 should be considered by the board as a standard setting project, and perhaps making the observation that that feedback should be considered by the board in the upcoming agenda consultation, where we expect the IES 38 project to be a potential project included within that consultation. Would the committee like to just show, give me a show of hands of whether you'd like that to... Yes, it looks like there's agreement, and also overall, and Brian also has noted that he's supportive of that. So we don't need to formally vote per se, it's not a decision, but there's a lot of hands up, so we'll do that as well.
Yep.
Okay. With that, I think we have earned a 15-minute break.
Yeah, I just have
one. Oh, sorry, Katrina. Yes. Should we explain to people? Sorry. Thank you for keeping me on point. So the committee has voted in support of that agenda decision, but of course we now have the extra step in our due process where the board will be given the opportunity to raise any objections they have to the agenda decision. So, Katrina, with that in mind, would you be able to just set out for those listening what the next steps are with this agenda decision?
Sure. And as Sue said, we just thought it might be helpful to clarify to anybody listening into this meeting just what the next steps are. So as Sue mentioned, in accordance with the due process handbook, the next step on this cloud computing agenda decision is to take it for the board's consideration and ask the board whether it would object to the agenda decision. That will only be possible that we'll take that to the board at the April board meeting. And so with that timing in mind, we don't want to hold up publication of IFRIG update for March. So what we plan to do is go ahead and publish IFRIG update for March, that in the context of this cloud computing discussion will note the committee's discussion of the topic. It'll note that the committee reached conclusions on the topic, but IFRIG update will not include any of the sort of approved agenda decision wording at this stage. So IFRIG update will, by the way, note and comment on the fact that the next step is for the board to discuss it at their April meeting. And then, assuming that the board does not object to the agenda decision itself then will get published after the board's April meeting, and will ensure that that agenda decision then has an April date included on it. So those are the next steps.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. No. All right, so now having remembered to do everything we need to do, a minute break. So we will reconvene, let's say, at 1:30 London time. So I'll see you shortly. Thank you.